Conferences. Long agendas, big venues, always on your feet, barely getting to see the people that you want to see, and then, of course, the expense. Well, the three of us at Good Morning Hospitality are launching Good Morning Retreats. Our first retreat is this July 8th through the 10th at the Horst Hospitality Training School in Auburn, Alabama. If you go to goodmorningretreats.com, you'll find out more information about our first retreat that we're launching. We have already filled half the slots. We have 20 available and we have about 13 already filled. So make sure you go there, you apply, show your interest, and we'll get you all situated for our first ever Good Morning Retreat. Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast. And now back to the episode.
Welcome to Good Morning Hospitality, your one-stop shop for the latest news, noteworthy trends, and thought-provoking discussions across the industry. From hotels and short-term rentals to all things travel and hospitality, you'll find each episode equips you with the information that you need to start your week. Join us on Good Morning Hospitality every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
Who's bringing that early morning energy?
I am. Except I have to say, daylight savings, like yesterday I woke up and I was fine. And then this morning I like could not. I don't know. That hour difference makes it hard.
Can we just be like Arizona, the state that I'm in now, and not participate in daylight savings at all? I think that would be a great win for the country of America. We should just stop doing daylight.
Future Will is going to need to know that when he goes back to Denver, you're going to have to recognize daylight savings time.
I know. But we should stop moving forward. I think this is a big win for the United States if we just say, you know what, no more. We don't need daylight
savings. Who doesn't want to wake up an hour earlier? 1 hour closer to Monday, the best day of the week. Y'all are crazy.
See, Michael's getting all the sayings in this morning. That's what he's trying to do. He's trying to get that EME, all the stuff.
Well, we're screaming for the data, so we brought on Jamie Lane today.
He's got a lot of coffee in his cup. Excited to have you back, Jamie. How you been? What's catch us up in the world of AirDNA and Jamie Lane since last month?
Yeah, I'm not a whole lot to update on. We're fully in kid mode. School soccer started, and we're doing swim practice, and it's fun time at the Land household. Shopping for a short-term rental up in North Georgia right now. So anyone out there with leads on a good house, let me know. And
I want to buy it right next door to wherever Jamie buys.
And we can start an amenity build out. So no, things are good. I'm missing our ELT meeting today by being on the podcast. So excited about that.
Ooh, right. Tell Demi and the whole crew, we're sorry, but not sorry. # we got Jamie Lane. I love it. Well, super exciting. But before we actually get into today's topics, speaking of data, we have some data that's backed by Sojo, and we have to give our amazing partners at Sojo a great shout out. So based on a case study they've done with a couple of their clients post-Sojo, they've decreased the average inspection time by 10%. They've increased the number of cleans performed by 10%. They've decreased in-clean complaints by 5%. And they've increased homes that pass inspection by over 10%. So if you're an operator and that data sounds good to you and you want to save a little money, get your amenities automated by Sojo, grab the link in our show notes and tell them that GMH sent you. So thank you, Sojo, for powering this podcast. We love you guys. And we're back to our normal topics. All right. So we have exciting stuff, a lot of Airbnb talk today. So I think Michael, You should pop us off.
Yeah.
Get us started, number one. Yeah.
So they spent hundreds of millions of dollars on an AI company, and it is official. The AI photo tour is now live. I haven't taken a spin through it yet. Brandy, I don't know if you have yet either. No. Okay. So maybe we'll all spin through that here soon. One of the most interesting things for me is kind of probably the tip of the iceberg for the vendor landscape in the industry. They knocked out their first smart lock integration. Mm-hmm. So there's a number of kind of offline things as an operator of just a single unit or hundreds of units that you have to do. And historically, one of them has been smart lock integrations, updating access codes and all of that. But now it is easier to do directly through Airbnb. So Airbnb's mission to be the exclusive solo provider of bookings for individual hosts is one step closer to reality. You know, we all have our own thoughts on their pricing tools, but this one is not controversial. It is simply helpful to the hosts.
As long as it works.
Yeah. As long as it works. If it doesn't work, I mean, I wouldn't want to touch a smart lock integration, because that's step one, is getting someone inside the house. If you mess that up and that goes wrong, Brandy,
fairly, yeah, it's,
right?
It's not fun.
Yeah, when it does, it's ugly. So I guess I hope Airbnb's support team is ready for it, because that they just opened a can of worms.
Yeah, you get the calls of like, my code doesn't work, or and then like half of those calls are just people not knowing how to use a lock.
they didn't read the instructions that they have to hit the check mark at the bottom left corner or whatever, and then they're like, oh, the code entered and nothing happened.
Yeah, I know.
It's
it'll be interesting, because I mean, if you think about like where it expands, like this isn't just like one home's locks. Like, what I'm curious, like the infrastructure, because like one home could have like five locks if you have one on the doors and the supply closet and all of that stuff. So it's not just as simple as like that automation. So we'll see where I imagine that as they continue to roll out this like suite for kind of like the, you know, individual hosts, that it will have we'll see a more robust platform for them soon.
I would love to get a comment from, you know, Steve Davis or somebody from the Operto team, because obviously, we've had them on many times. They've done a lot of activity in the space, from fundraising to acquisitions, etc. And you know, the tech piece behind it, like you guys said, it has to work. And so to have that integration, obviously, I think like we know Airbnb well enough that they're pretty well calculated when they make a decision to do an integration or to do a feature update. I would say it's going to work, but I also, to Michael's point, it's only going to be for the people that are the one-off hosts. I don't think the bigger operators are going to be able to use it. Obviously, we're not using Airbnb like a property management software. So, you know, for the people that are, I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona right now for Level Up Your Listing. Shout out to Natalie and Tatiana for putting it on. But, you know, this audience demographic is perfect for. It's 100% perfect for, because maybe they want to get to five units. They only want to be on Airbnb, and they don't want to do all the other things that involve margin taking from having a whole, you know, full scale tech stack to X, Y, and Z thing. So I think it's probably going to be fine, but I think probably definitely has some tech providers keeping closer eye on the OTA now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it, to your point, unless there's some sort of collaboration between Airbnb and Vrbo backdoor, it's not a threat to the clients of the Opertas of the world. I remember, yeah. I mean, shoot, I guess I don't remember exactly when. It's been maybe 7 or 8 years when I was at a Vrbo conference, HomeAway at the time, and they announced their pricing tool. And I was sitting next to Ian McHenry of Beyond Pricing at the time. And I was like, dude, what does this mean for you? Like, does this just kill your business? And he was freaking out a little bit, but he wasn't as like razzled as I thought he was going to be. But ultimately, you know, they're a pro tool, marketing to professionals. Any tool that, you know, a platform provides is going to be self-serving. It's interesting that the smart lock isn't self-serving. I think it only opens cans of worms for Airbnb. But it's, I don't think it's a threat to the pro vendors in the space yet. It could be a threat if you focused on the, you know, 5 to 50 persona, because as Airbnb rolls out more and more tools, it could be more likely that they'd just they might miss out on some bookings, but they don't have to spend X amount more every month on a PMS, on hardware solutions, et cetera. So I'd be on the lookout of how that evolves over the next 2 or 3 years. Short term, cool. Not a big deal.
Well, Jamie Lane, I would love some thoughts from you. AirDNA recently acquired Uplisting. So Airbnb becoming more like a PMS, does that make you guys a little, is that something that you guys think about or have an eye on? And you may not be able to comment due to this question.
I'd love to comment.
Okay, great.
Because I think it shows the power of a PMS. And then like you decide that you really like this feature of like, oh, I really love smart locks. And then like inevitably you're going to decide that you want to be on multiple channels and then you still want that functionality. And you're like, how do I get this functionality while still being on multiple channels? Oh, I need to subscribe to Uplisting.
Shameless plug, but yeah, exactly.
Hey-o.
It's okay. Yeah, last week we all plugged our own stuff, so it's all good. I'm always just curious, especially because as you guys are becoming probably, I would call it more vertically integrated than not. You know, it's definitely just something interesting as you see a big provider or a big OTA, tons of backing, billions of dollar market cap. So like, always interesting to hear you guys' thoughts. Shall we move on to more feature updates?
There was one that I thought was particular. Like the last update, we had guest favorite and these new badges to kind of highlight the good listings. And then now we have the worst listing badges, apparently. Like if you're
bottom, I'm like, shout out to any worst listings out there. Send them to us. We'd love to take a look.
And I just, I think, from a traveler, that's great. But it will make it impossible. I think, or not impossible, but incredibly difficult. Like if you have a bad run of it, or like you're waiting to renovate a property or whatever it is, and you get stuck with that, that is just going to have this positive feedback loop in a bad way of just like no bookings and spiraling. And then you're never like crawling out of that hole that they put you in is going to be so difficult. And so
and
I think
tons of owner complaints.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. And so I think this is from a traveler's perspective. And I understand why. I mean, Airbnb is constantly fighting this reputation. We saw with the SNL skit of like the quality of the listings. So I understand that. But if you end up in that bottom 10, and it's like, I didn't really see a lot of description about like how there is that like just in the area that you search in or kind of how that's going to be done. But I think once you get in that spiral, it's going to be very difficult to get out. So that is just another plug for diversifying your revenue streams to not be so reliant on an OTA that's making judgment calls about the quality of your listing.
Well, I wouldn't say they're making judgment calls. They're probably using all the available data at their fingertips. Yeah. That said, could this be one of Airbnb's famous PR stunts? Right. So now they have a talking point of removing their or letting guests know of their worst properties. Jamie, I'd be fascinated to know if you've pulled the data because I'm screaming for it. Do we have any data on the worst listings yet? Has it actually been rolled out?
It has not been rolled out yet, as far as I can tell. You have to be pretty bad to be in the bottom 1%, though. Like these are only going to be the worst of the worst. Like, and when we categorize it, like, because average rating is like a 4.75. It's like on our platform, like we put it in groups, and like the bottom group is like 4.4 and below. And that's like the bottom 8%. So it's probably like below 4%, like in the threes to get to the bottom 1%. So that's pretty bad in terms of, but with a lot of large property managers many of the large property managers sit in like the 4.2s, 4.3s in terms of averages, which means it's really just going to call out some of the less performing large property managers out there.
Well, to go into Michael's comment really quick, I think you might actually be correct, because they, in the same update, they talk about removing like 100,000 listings. So if they're removing bad performing listings that are unverified, why would they give a worst host badge or a worst property badge? Like that doesn't add up. If they're removing properties because of it, then they wouldn't give you a badge to celebrate your crappy property.
They're genius at PR. They are fantastic at PR. They always have been. They know how to spin negative stories, come out with product features, and then have a talking point the next time it comes up on SNL.
Yeah, I think that your point about the professional operators, like the larger you get, it is, you're just dealing with reviews and reservations on a much, much larger scale. So you we go through every week, we go through all the reviews from all the sources from like the previous 7 days, and you'll see, like, you'll get a bunch of good reviews, but then if you get a bad review, it takes, I forget, we did the math one time, but it takes like, I don't know, 19 or 20 5-star reviews to combat that one or 2-star review. And if you like aggregate all those together, I mean, it's just, you're just dealing with the scale that the, you know, ones and twosies aren't dealing with, which, I mean, to be fair, as we've said before, Airbnb is not in the market of catering to the larger operators, but it will be interesting to see how strict they are with this, because if they start taking off huge chunks of their revenue, you know, removing them or, you know, decreasing the visibility of the larger hosts, that could also, you know, negatively impact them.
And to shout out to one of our live viewers, Tanner Cummings, for saying they're going to announce on April 1st that it's a joke. Maybe, but just kidding. But for any of our live viewers, please submit any of your thoughts or comments if you think this, you know, change is going to impact either your business or the impact of businesses around you in the industry. We'd love to know your thoughts. It's very interesting. Let us know if you guys checked out the spring release. There's a lot of interesting stuff. But shall we move on to our next story or next topic? All right. So Lifehouse CEO, moving on, co-founder, CEO, departuring. And I think the big takeaway from the article that we saw was due to overhype of the tech stack and the ability to perform. And there was also some operational headaches and kinks that just weren't getting ironed out. So owners and hotel owners were pretty upset with the lack of delivering. Brandy, your thoughts as your operator as well.
Yeah, I have, like, I feel like there must be a lot that we don't know going on, but obviously from like what we do know, I mean, everybody oversells with our tech capabilities. That was just like the play of the last decade. And I think, you know, you always put your super best foot forward and try to sell all this. Now, what this, you know, if there are specific milestones that they promised and then they weren't achieving those, like, that's one thing. But I mean, I think that this just goes back to, like, this is a really difficult business, you know, and promising these leaner operations with the improved technology. Like, I think that it just, no one has really mastered that yet. And this is another example of people trying. And then I'm not surprised that they kind of moved the CEO out, because they had to make, you know, there has to be a visible change that they're listening to the complaints. But yeah, I mean, without knowing kind of like the actual happenings that are going on, this sounds like a lot of other companies in the space that want to be super tech forward, and it's a difficult business to run. And those two things kind of like happening in tandem.
Yeah. And for our listeners, really quickly, just to, if you don't know who Lifehouse is or what Lifehouse is, then Lifehouse is a hotel operation company. They received a lot of hype over the last couple of years, raised significant amount of funding, I would say. So just FYI, they're an operations company that partners with hotel owners. So just giving that quick thing. And then, so Michael, go ahead.
Thanks, Will. Yeah. So they advertise themselves as three things: a brand, a tech player, and an operator. and you can't be all three. Like Marriott still uses other people's tech. And they do have an operation company, but it only operates a fraction of their hotels, not all of them. They are a brand through and through. And Lifehouse, I think, was trying to figure out what they really are. And I think it came down to Rami wanting them to be a brand, selling it as a tech company, but actually being an operator. So the whole business was just misaligned. And we saw that. I mean, the first red flag was when Booking invested $15 million into it because of a kayak partnership, and they were set to open some kayak hotels. I think they opened a couple. There's one in Miami. There was another one, I believe, that opened in Mexico. And then that relationship fell apart. And once that fell apart, then obviously not good if a major investor in your company is now not even using you as a client. Not a great sign. So, I mean, the warning flags were there, but I mean, I love their brands. They've done a fantastic job. I've stayed in them. I've gone to hang out at them, gone to have cocktails at them. They're really cool. All of the lobbies are bars. They operate it more like a short-term rental. It's very staff light. And that was their whole pitch. Let them hire in a staff light team, and the margins would be better for the owner, but obviously they were not able to deliver on that. So hopefully, it's not too late, but let's see how that shakes out. It does look pretty similar to what Sonder tried to do: build themselves as a brand, actually be an operator, but sell themselves as a tech company. The playbook was there.
I mean, that's the thing about the staff light model. Like, I mean, it's really difficult. And I think you have to, some of the key parts of their brand, like you're talking about the lobbies and the bars, like there's the Lifehouse in Little Havana, a great rooftop bar, all this stuff. But if you have those components, you inherently just have to have more people. I don't know if that's kind of one of the things that, if they have other operators that are operating the F&B, then that's probably the smarter move. But if you want to be light, you can't have, I think, some of the brand components that they were after, because it just requires more people to like facilitate that.
For sure. Yep. I couldn't say or agree more with everything you guys said. So I think maybe for the next topic, and this is where Jamie is also going to be the data wizard behind the whole show, because what are we doing, Michael? We're screaming for the data. I think interesting story. So the EU announced kind of more jump into the laws and requirements of providing more data for operators out there, listing address, host name, contact info, and many other things into building basically a database by 2025. Jamie, let's get your thoughts on this.
Yeah, and broadly, it's going to give governments and in the EU a better sense of what's going on within their countries. And they already collect data from the OTAs, and they have for 3 or 4 years now on sort of aggregate statistics for the major cities, all the big countries. And we can see exactly how many nights are being sold in France on a given month through the OTAs. Like, that data is already put out through Eurostat from the OTAs. It's great. I use it to check our accuracy every month. And broadly, though, and it's still going to be very aggregate in terms of what we can see, but at the government level, they're going to know exactly what is listed on the major OTAs, what the exact address is, who's hosting it, and how much bookings they're actually getting. So, and it looks like Airbnb was on board with it. According to the release, they sort of applauded the rules and called it a watershed moment for Airbnb in the industry. And shows Airbnb working with the regulators. I think, and we've talked about it, regulation is the biggest threat probably to the business going forward. And if this is part of sort of Airbnb and the other major OTAs working closely with the government in terms of forming maybe good laws going forward and at least allow the industry to continue to operate in its current form and continue to grow. Like, I think it could be a good thing.
Yeah, I think I see, I mean, especially in Europe where there is a lot more regulation, I think the cooperation, and this seems like a positive step forward. I do, it is just that I knew they were going to have the address, but you said the booking values that they're getting in, like they're getting all of your financial information. I mean, I guess you're supposed to be giving that anyways, if you're paying the taxes. So there's that. I feel like there's something that we're missing, like that there's kind of like a gotcha moment that hasn't happened yet. And I don't really, go ahead, Michael. Yeah.
I mean, anytime the government builds massive database lists of an activity that they obviously don't love happening, then there's risk that now they can ban it. And now they have the personal information and property level information of everybody. So, I mean, that's the risk. In the short term, it's a fantastic, you know, resolution, I think, for everybody. The governments accept that this activity is going on. The individuals get to keep doing it. But yeah, it does seem like the hammer may be waiting to drop in the future.
Yeah. And I understand. I mean, there's just like the classic example of like Barcelona, for example, which is just like there's really like extreme concerns about over tourism. And so there's certain cities where I see like kind of like the panic around it and wanting to make sure that, you know, that housing is still available. But I don't know, there's, for an industry that has been around for so long, especially in Europe, there seems to be this like animosity towards it that doesn't make a ton of sense. I think it's because Airbnb has become more of like a household name, but this industry has existed mm-hmm. for decades, and it is like a backbone of so much of those coastal economies that I'm worried for operators there who like, where if the local government is too short-sighted and they take whatever this information is and impose restrictions, that it will have some negative, you know, effects on those communities.
Well, thankfully, there's one thing that we know about governments: they're slow to take action. So they're very slow. And at the end of the day, like I'm in the same boat. I think it's a very good short-term win. It shows big OTAs collaborating with regulators. That way, you know, hopefully this gets a positive ripple effect into the states, especially in like Colorado, where we're facing a bunch of like regulation issues and taxings and all this other stuff, and many other states in the country are too. But I'm also not a big fan of like governments creating databases and lists like this, as Michael and I probably shared the same sentiment there. But at the end of the day, you know, we'll see. They could use it for good or they could use it for bad. But thankfully, the government's slow, and so we probably won't see much use of this database until 2026, maybe at the latest. I'm assuming, even though they say 2025, but I'm giving them an extra year for leeway.
I'd rather see a database than like, you know, and registration and things like that than some of what we're seeing here, where it's just like full stop, like banning, which is happening. And so this does seem like, we've been talking about how like the pendulum swings from one side to the other. This does seem more middle of the pendulum kind of thing, fingers crossed. So
yeah, I agree.
We'll know when we know, but for now we're all right.
Yeah, if any European listeners have any thoughts on like how this is affecting your business, we'd love to hear more, or what your thoughts are, like how it's going to affect you going forward.
Agreed.
Nice.
Jamie Lane, what else you got for us in the data world? What's a piece of data? What's something you're looking at just loving? You want to shout from the rooftop.
Apparently North Georgia. So if you're trying to buy a new state, Jamie Lane's buying there. You know that's a good market.
And it was one of our top 10 on best places to invest. And the trends are still pretty weak in terms of overall industry performance. And we saw, and Q1 this year is probably going to still be down pretty significantly in terms of occupancy. We're seeing overall national rates down. We're seeing length of stays shorten pretty substantially. in a lot of and coastal city markets still. So, and we're still not, and if you guys remember when we came out with our outlook report at the back end of last year, we were sort of like, first part of 2023 is going to be weak, sort of hopefully moving towards a strengthening in the latter part of the year. And so far, for better or worse, like the first half of the year has been weak. So far, our predictions have been true. February was better than January, though. So we turned from and January bookings were down year over year to positive in January, and as we talked about, was a really bad weather month. So people maybe delayed trips a bit, and we saw bookings increase again in February. So things are powering through for spring break travel. I know you guys talked about Miami. We're still seeing decent bookings so far in Miami and Q1.
We're still here. Yeah. So it's okay.
I was laughing reading the New York Times yesterday and seeing sort of on the front page, like Miami's been canceled for spring break, but
no, it's not. It's like, and also it's just the beach. Like there are, you know, there's other parts of the city.
And then talking about sort of governments and working with data, I just committed to going up to the conference up in Banff in mid-April for the CanStays Rental Alliance. And they've got quite a few major governmental figures sort of committed to coming to the conference. The regulations that have been put into place in Canada have been pretty draconian recently. The goal is to get a good dialogue going with the regulators and with the major operators within the country and sort of and figure out a better path forward that can benefit both housing affordability and still promoting tourism within the country. So, and like, there's so many issues that I'm learning about in Canada now of like, and there's just not hospitals in many sort of provinces within the country. So like, if you've got to travel to a hospital, like if you don't have one in your province, like the government pays for it, the travel and your lodging. And like a lot of the sort of hotels just like aren't made for like, if you've got to come and stay a week, like, are you going to stay in a hotel for a week or do you want to stay in a short-term rental, or is a short-term rental really all that's going to be like work for your situation if the reason you're coming is because of a like health issue? So short-term rentals are really beneficial for the local communities in Canada. So trying to put a spotlight on that. I'm just learning, but I've got a month before I've got to be an expert on it up there. So excited.
Well, big shout out to Catherine Ratcliffe then. Yeah. She's been putting this on, one of our amazing Destination Air winners back in 2021 at the Book Direct show. She's awesome. Definitely need to get her back on my podcast, which is a great reminder to let me text her after this. So I'll hit her up, but shout out to Catherine for putting on such an amazing event. Super excited, down to support. We'll put a link in the show notes for all the listeners here. That's so interesting to hear about the hospital thing in Canada. I didn't know that. So it's quite fascinating on the use case for the short-term rental community. Anything else that you're doing? You doing any other events or travels for anything else like that? Just always curious. You know, I'm missing the AirDNA team here at Level Up Your Listing this year. It's going to be sad not seeing you guys at the conference.
No, and sad to miss. And I got invited to some boring stuff like ULI conference in New York, doing an appraisal institute event. Like, you know, really hard hitting stuff. I'm speaking at the Hunter Hotel Investment Conference next week here in Atlanta. That. So it'll be 2,500 mostly independent hotel operators here, sort of talking about the trends. So I'll be up on stage with STR, the hotel data company, and then some friends from Calibri Labs and CBRE. So it should be a good event. Nothing dedicated to short-term rentals, but I feel like there's a broad interest in what's going on within our industry for that sort of group.
Yeah, they're screaming for short-term rental data and they don't even know it.
Right.
They don't even know it. They're going to try and make you look bad though. So.
No, I did it last year. Actually had a great conversation with the HLA, the AHOA group, the Asian Hotel Owners Association. So it's always good to get dialogue going and putting a face behind an industry and not just being it this terrible Airbnb industry competing and breaking all these laws and unfair competition that maybe the hotel lobby likes to paint us as.
Yeah. And Tanner wants to know, what event is this called? The other one that you're just talking about?
Yeah, the Hunter Hotel Investment Conference put on by Lee Hunter.
Yep. Yep. Awesome. Well, I think this was a great episode. Thanks again, Jamie, for joining us once again on this monthly data episode, always packed with great information from you. Brandy, Michael, anything to wrap up with the listeners before we close out?
No, just going back into the onboarding foray. So if anybody else is in the midst of that, you and I are on the same page and I feel your pain.
It's going to be a great week. I can feel it. Data's going to turn around, Jamie. We're coming out of the winter thaw. Will's hosting a conference. It's going to be a good week.
Yeah, we're going to have a great week. Shout out to all the Good Morning Hospitality listeners that are joining us every week. You guys make us so much better and inspired every Monday just because of your participation in the show. So to wrap up the episode, we covered a couple great stories, but want to say one more thank you to our sponsors at Sojo. They're amazing. If you are trying to save some money, save some time, save some headache, get your amenities on automation by Sojo's technology. It's great. Their products are awesome as well. Shout out to the three of us. Jamie will get in probably later once we got some talking to do. But Good Morning Startups is our advisory company where we bring the latest and greatest startup adventures and founders through the ropes of short-term rentals. One of our great companies, Bestie AI, out there crushing it for a lot of the operators with their new AI tool. So big shout out to them. And of course, like always, make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast. Leave us a review. And if you can do one better than that, follow, subscribe. Make sure you get those updates and let the notifications of the new episodes hit your phone and inbox every week because we love you. And for all the listeners out there, we'll see you again next week.